Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have as my guest Helen Adrian, the author of On Fertile Ground, Healing Infertility. Helen is an award-winning psychotherapist, and this is a unique book looking at all aspects, medical and spiritual and emotional and mental, all the aspects of what women do when they are challenged with infertility. Welcome, Helen. How are you doing today?
Oh, thank you so much, Susan. I'm happy to be here.
So, would you like to share with our audience how you became interested in this topic?
Well, actually, it was a kind of by default. I had many years ago, in the process of having my own children, learned about the necessity of support services for anything that goes through an OBGYN office. And when my kids were little, I went back to graduate school and I got my MSW, and I was not a teeny bopper anymore, so I just got myself some good supervision and went right into private practice serving people who were referred to me by obstetrics and gynecology. And it turned out that in 1979, there were very few services in this realm to begin with, but in the infertility world in particular. And so a lot of the patients who were coming in because they were struggling with a longing for a baby that was unmet at that moment. And I have to say that in the beginning, they taught me what they needed me to know. And it grew from there.
That's fascinating. I was off the air a little bit because they had to call me back. I apologize for that.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that you were trained in mind-body therapy at Harvard, Harvard Benson's Henry's Mind-Body Medical Institute. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And that's where you, did you have an interest in the spiritual aspects of this prior to that, or was that in order to help, I guess, deepen your understanding of mind-body techniques?
Well, it was, I would say, all of the above. I was never inclined to get training in psychoanalysis. I was much mm-hmm. more of a humanist and a practical thinker in terms of what's going to help. And I found my way to two things that turned out to be a real boon to not only infertility patients, but anyone who was struggling with a high level of stress. And one of those trainings was in mind-body therapy, and the other one was in clinical hypnosis. And both of those techniques really provide me with a panoramic view of so many entry points. No matter who the person is, there's a door that I can go in with them that's going to help them reduce their level of stress. And infertility ranks up there in the stress department on a par with life-threatening disorders such as HIV/AIDS and cancer and heart disease. So, you know, I think it's because of the profundity of what longing for a baby is really all about that the stress levels go flying so high.
It's most likely that when you have that kind of longing for a baby, I believe it's probably very likely that you have a soul contract to bring a baby in, and that soul contract has an energy behind it that is all its own,
mm-hmm.
Which probably accounts for the stress. Now, as you so well put in your book, stress is the enemy of fertility, and so that's why mind-body techniques are so important overcoming that.
But the stress also, the spiritual component, the drive behind it, also accounts for the ferocity with which people attack this problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the problem with what goes on is not the intent. It is that no matter what level of coping skills a person has, I can pretty much guarantee that it's not going to be enough to contend with something Mostly because there's such uncertainty. You never know when this is going to end. And there
right.
are women who go on for years before this gets resolved in one way or another.
My interest in this subject came about primarily in my medical practice. I had read an article that spiritual techniques, such as spiritual healing, acupuncture, other energetic spiritual techniques, have a high rate of success healing infertility. And that was a surprise to me, because I thought perhaps, you know, the majority of fertility is blocked tubes and infections and, you know, just the normal physical things.
Well, you know, of course there are medical diagnoses that are, I would say, most of the time accounting for this. But the trouble is, once a woman hears infertility, or a man or a
mm-hmm.
couple, their stress level flies off into the ionosphere someplace.
Right.
And so what you're referring to, you're calling spiritual, I think perhaps the audience would connect with a more generic term, and that is Eastern approaches, because you mentioned acupuncture, which is a science, you know, in and of itself.
Right.
But the thing is that many of these techniques have something in common, and that is what has been called inner stillness. I call
mm-hmm.
it finding an infertility-free zone.
Right.
And what it does is it takes them, I mean, I say it in the book a lot of different ways. It takes people under the turbulence. It takes them within themselves. In a way, with mind-body techniques, with hypnosis, where they are, they're in a kind of a bubble mm-hmm. and just breathing and being in the present moment. There have been some studies that, two in particular that I share with patients, one of which took coping mechanisms and divided them into two categories, problem solving and letting go. Problem solving,
mm-hmm.
coping, and letting go coping. And
right.
Problem-solving coping is pretty self-explanatory. You know, it could be anything from, you know, I don't like the way my doctor is working with me. Solution, get a different doctor.
Mm-hmm.
The letting go techniques are the ones that actually have been shown to have a high correlation with rates of pregnancy. Because it's not about doing anything, it's just about letting yourself be and creating a place that the limbic brain, which is the emotional brain, it's the brain that, you know, as a doctor, I hope I'm saying this correctly, but it seems to be the link between the body, namely the brain stem and all of the autonomic functions, and the mind, the cognitive function, and that's where trauma gets lodged. And when
right,
you
yeah.
when you do these techniques that bring you into the present moment, just breathing and being and screening out with various techniques the things that keep you like in a frenzy, the limbic brain, which cannot tell time, lets go of the grip that the body has and
mm-hmm.
returns a person to a state of receptivity. And for some people, this is prayer, you know,
right.
and for others, it's various breathing techniques or the hypnosis, self-hypnosis that I teach, or mindfulness
mm-hmm.
or guided imagery. Those are the things that really give people a break from the intense mind-body stress experience of infertility.
Yes, I'd like to tell a little story that happened. I think it was about in 2000. It may have been even earlier than that. I was asked to teach a course in spiritual healing at a local hospital, and I went and we did a couple-hour session teaching people to lay hands on. And as I was going around the room, you know, kind of looking at we had about eight or nine groups working together. One group called me over because they weren't getting anywhere. And in the group was a couple who had had a 7-year history of infertility, you know, the story, multiple IVFs, you know, the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And they asked me to lay hands on her, and I did. And we were both transported into a place that was very interesting. It really wasn't in the third dimension. It was another place. And in that place, I saw that she had died during childbirth. And it was a very interesting energetic exchange that occurred. I don't think I've really read anything since then similar to that, but it was a massive energetic shift. And she reported later to me that that evening she felt she got pregnant. Mm-hmm. And then ended up having a child. And actually, the next time I met the child was 3 years old when it had cut its finger off in a door, and I went to the ER to sew the finger back on, the same hospital that mm-hmm. we had done the healing in. And what was so interesting was that the child that time looked at me, and he said to me, "I remember you before I was with Mommy." Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. when I walked in the door, he recognized mm-hmm. who I was. Mm-hmm. Isn't that interesting? Never met him before.
And not only is it interesting, but, you know, it is beyond the third dimension. And, you know, for people who are finely tuned, and even people who are not necessarily psychic themselves but are open, these are the kind of stories that are not uncommon.
It's pretty amazing.
It is amazing. And actually, I'm delighted that that you saw enough of the spiritual component in my book to be launching off this interview in that direction. Because I find that, you know, people don't necessarily walk in the door talking about their spirituality, but the minute you ask them, all sorts of things tumble out. And they're very happy to have another place to seek refuge.
Well, just think how often in history, if reincarnation is true, women have died or had horrible experiences in childbirth. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't have to go too far back in history to understand that, you know, even today you can have a pretty horrible, you know, I mean, there are epidurals that don't take. There are, you know, there are things that occur in a modern hospital that aren't pleasant. So it's not at all, beyond reason to think that if you've had really bad experiences in childbirth, very traumatic experiences, something within you is going to keep you from getting pregnant. And it may manifest as antibodies. It may manifest as,
exactly,
you know, the body that doesn't get over an infection because the T cells just aren't doing anything. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, these are all physical manifestations, but not really what's behind it. And we have a self-preservation part of us that is very, very deep, you know, and is it subconscious, as you say. That's why mm-hmm. hypnosis can be so important.
Oh, my goodness. It is extraordinary what goes on with the hypnosis and the way people really, you watch them opening up. And in my book, I bring something in that's not common when you read about this topic, and that is the power of the unconscious mind.
Yes.
And, you know, I operate on the premise that nature loves the truth. So, for instance, if you plant a tulip bulb in the ground upside down, it mm-hmm. will make a U-turn because the shoot knows how to seek the sun.
Right.
And the same can be said for things that are buried in the unconscious mind. The story I tell in the book is about a woman who came in wanting to know whether her infertility was her fault. And I was not terribly pleased with her blaming herself like that, but I did seek after why she felt that she should even ask me that question. And it turns out that she had a very harsh and critical mother because she had a disorder that kept her peeing in bed until she was 16, at which point it was surgically corrected. And all I said to this woman was, "Are you afraid that you will be the kind of mother that you had?" And out this floodgate of tears, long story short, she conceived the next month because we unearthed the truth of what was holding back. What you're doing in the way you're guiding this conversation is you're bringing it to an even broader place, an even deeper place in the unconscious mind, and that is the soul level.
Yeah, well, I think we have soul contracts, especially with important relationships in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
The masters teach that we choose our parents and that, you know, we have soul contracts with our children, which we can, you know, we can honor or we can choose not to honor. I mean, contracts are contracts. They're not absolutely binding. Mm-hmm. But if you don't go that way, you may feel uneasy and unfulfilled. And then the other thing that I see a lot is women who've had multiple abortions yeah. early in life, when later in life they're trying to conceive, they mm-hmm. have blockages there, probably because of guilt.
Well, I have worked with exactly this issue with people, and I have to say it's one of the most glorious, satisfying things that I do in my practice, because I help people get real about what the abortion was all about.
Mm-hmm.
I have techniques for working with them so that they can respect what it was that was growing in them. And I find that people get relief when they give respect, and then they conceive.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's been absolutely glorious.
So I guess, you know, we just need to bring awareness, which your book does, about how complex a being we are. You know, we're not just our physical selves.
Right.
We're not just our emotional selves. Everything is interrelated and actually quite complicated if you figure out all of the aspects and how they interrelate to each other. And then when you add the relationship into it,
mm-hmm.
That's something you did well in your book, where you talk about how infertility can help relationships mature, especially marriages.
Definitely. Yeah, yeah. But the whole thing is the way I present it is very broad, and I think the people who would have the most trouble in really getting a sense of just how broad and complex it is are the people who are left-brain linear thinkers.
Right.
If you remember, there was a place in the book where I said that I was interviewing such a woman, and she said, you know, yeah, I believe in a higher power. And then she busted out with her doctor's name. You know,
right.
She said, brain is the higher power. Well, of
right.
course, I mean, these are people who are so highly skilled. What goes on in reproductive endocrinology these days is absolutely mm-hmm. mind-boggling, and thank God for it. But this is a woman who didn't need to expand her vista because she conceived with IVF the first time twice.
Mm-hmm.
So to her, it was science.
Right. And it can be. I mean, it can just be limited.
Yeah.
You see, I believe in guidance. I believe that people with physical problems are guided to physical solutions.
Mm-hmm.
People with more spiritual problems could be guided to my healing class, you know, maybe
yeah.
after they attempted the... And, you know, not everybody can afford IVF. IVF is expensive.
That's right. That's right.
So you don't always have to just do IVF first. I mean, who can afford $10,000, you know, multiple times? I mean... That's
thousands
just a small
of
portion of the population, especially these days.
Yeah. But, you know, the thing is that, as you started to say before, that when you take into consideration that it's not only a woman or a man, it's the relationship. It's 1 + 1 is way more than 2.
Mm-hmm.
How complicated this gets. I mean, if each of them has different coping skills. And I mean, I've had women say to me, I am angry that he's not as angry as I am.
Right. Well, I mean, you're going to have different degrees of desire. I mean, not everybody, I'm 57 now. I never wanted a child. That desire never came to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and some people say, well, that's really unnatural. And it may be. But I just believe I don't have in my soul contract the desire, you know, the little piece of paper that says I'm going to have a child.
Well,
I had many other things, but that wasn't one of them. But I can understand, you know, that doesn't keep me from understanding how women, because they've been my patients, women who feel that if they can't have a child, they have no reason to live. And that's like a really important soul contract, most likely. You know, that's, I mean, it's almost like this is why you're here, and if you can't do it, come back out. We'll send you back in maybe with better equipment to do it next time, you know. So there are, you know, there are different we're here doing different things. So, Helen, are you there?
I am, yes.
Okay, I'm sorry. So basically, once they a couple comes to you, do they usually have under their belt a couple of IVF attempts? Is this something that is common, or are you seeing people before they've gone the route of the endocrine clinic?
Well, you know, it really varies enormously, but what I've noticed is that the people who come to me sooner rather than later are the women who are older. And
right.
There are quite a number of women who got the message in this society that they could do anything that they want. And their lawyers and their doctors and their high flyers in other various fields, and they travel for work and whatnot. And along the way, it's like, oops, you know, I think we should have a child. You know, sometimes they marry late.
Right.
Or they decide that they have, you know, tasks that they want to check off before they have a child, and they don't really have the information, or they haven't had the information for a decade or more, that fertility rates decline.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you add the uh-oh and what the body does with that and how it becomes, you know, in a kind of a Gordian knot mentally and physically, you know, that doesn't help. So they come to me at all stages, but one of the things that I find curious is that when a woman calls me, and most of the time it's the woman, I will say to her, would you like to bring your husband in? And it's been fascinating to me that most often they say, I'd like to come in myself first, and maybe just mm-hmm. come in myself, because there's something that about connecting with me as a woman, or just wanting to feel totally understood and just get so much off her chest in the first session. You know, where I can, I try to figure out what's going on in the couple relationship. Very often, it builds a strength between the partners. But at the same time, it's such it can put them at risk because of the incredible demand. Every day is something else. If it's during an IVF cycle, they're racing off to the clinic at 7 o'clock in the morning, and the husband has to learn how to give injections of the drugs that stimulate superovulation. And all kinds of decisions to be made, and because the technology is so intricate, do we use this technology or not? Whether it be the kind of technology that selects one cell from a fertilized embryo and sends it out for testing, because sometimes miscarriage is a chromosomal thing, or whether it's do we embrace ovum or sperm donation or surrogacy? It's mind-boggling, really. So, you know, how to get on the same page as a couple is often something that needs a little support from the outside.
Yeah, there's a great deal of testing that goes on before you even do IMF, and then when you look at the entire spectrum of choices, you know, sperm donation, ovum donation, even all the way up to adoption,
mm-hmm.
there's just a lot of different choices, and that makes for stress mm-hmm. when you have way too many choices.
Yeah. Now, the other thing that I have to impress upon people is that I teach mind-body stress reduction to individuals, but I also teach mind-body stress reduction classes.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that is difficult is that these are people who are suffering, and the last thing that they want to do is, you know, study something, even if it's going to help. And then they come into the classes or they come into the sessions and they learn, you know, let's say the relaxation response, and it takes enormous discipline to remember that if you're feeling like you're not in a good place, there's something you can reach for. You
right.
know, you're so debilitated that the last thing you want to do is say, what will help? And yet there are things that help enormously. You just have to practice them, and then you have to say, this is what I can do right now. And part of what makes infertility such an ordeal is that even when they have an exposure to these things, they have to also have the motivation to remember that they can reach for these things and use them.
Mm-hmm. So you are currently in New York City, is that right?
Yes.
And do you want to give your contact information at
oh,
this point
thank you. I'd
so
be delighted.
People might be able to look you up?
Yeah, my telephone is 212-758-0125, and I have worked on the phone with people from the United Kingdom and from California and various other places, as long as there's an English language in the picture. And then I have a website that is chock full of information. It's www.mind-body-unity.com. The resources tab has, I don't know, two dozen or more articles. There's a baby manifesto blog that can be interactive, and there's a free relaxation experience if you're willing to sign up for my newsletter, and you can get my book and my CD on the website as well.
Great, and you do the Mind Body classes in New York City then?
Well, that was the next thing I was going to say. Yes, I teach stress reduction classes at NYU Fertility Center. They are on Monday nights from 6:30 to 8:30. There is a series of four classes, using the mind to enter the body for stress reduction, using the mind to trick the brain for more enhanced coping, transforming negative thinking, and gaining clarity by building awareness. Those are the four classes. And people get a notebook filled with all kinds of information and all kinds of handouts that support what I teach. So that even though I've crammed what used to be a 10-week class into four classes, they can reinforce what they learn with this notebook. The classes can be taken in any order. You do not have to be an NYU patient to attend. All you have to do is call me and give me the contact information, and that's the registration.
Great.
So,
thank you.
And most people take all four classes because it is such a relief to have something to reach for that addresses that terrible feeling that's common to all infertility patients, and that is the feeling of being out of control.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing, if I may launch off for a moment
sure.
on a tangential topic, and that is that people who have read my book, including professional reviewers, have caught on to something that I'm thrilled about because it was sort of hanging out in the back of my mind as I was writing the book, and that is that while the book is specific for infertility, at the same time, because of the way the book is organized and written, if you're dealing with any adversity, the tenets in there and the mind-body program in there will make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody notices that, much to my delight.
Well, I have a theory, and you may or may not agree, but it's my observation that people usually fall into depression when they are off the path, so to speak, when they've mm-hmm. lost their way or they're unable to fulfill their soul's purpose or even figure out mm-hmm. where it is. And, of course, you relate in your chapter on depression and anxiety that depression is not uncommon with the diagnosis of infertility.
Mm-hmm.
So well, would you like to comment a little bit on that? I mean, is it
pretty much predictable, as is the
right.
anxiety? But one of the things that makes the book, you know, such a useful tool, I'm going to say what you said in a different way, is that I encourage people to study themselves so that they can find their authenticity, that people do get bumped off their path. And I do it by laying out six personality traits that they can look at from different angles. And I give examples of, you know, people that I've worked with over the years. The six traits are a tendency to think negatively, a tendency to get angry, you know, as a matter of routine, feelings of insecurity or impatience, level of self-esteem, and level of fearfulness. And when you read the book and you ask yourself, you know, hey, do I tend to think negatively about everything? If the answer is yes, then there are ways to address that. I teach what's called cognitive restructuring, where you can take an automatic negative thought and flip it into an affirmation. Again, that's something that has to be practiced. Once you realize this can help, then you have to do it, right? I had a woman who, she was American, but she was living in Paris. And she came in to visit her family and scheduled a session with me. And I taught her how to transform negative thinking. And the most fascinating email came to me after her son was born. She said, you know, I learned how I wasn't even aware of how negative I was. Then I learned how to work with my negative thoughts. And she said, every time I had a negative thought, I would go to the computer, I would take the negative thought, I would create an affirmation, and I would just type it over and over and over and over again. By the time her son was born, she had printed out 400 pages of the affirmations that she needed to counteract the negative thinking. So, you know, this is a way of really growing yourself. And, you know, the last chapter I call, you know, giving birth to a new improved you, because mm-hmm. that's what can happen.
Well, there, you know, there's not too many challenges in life that can't be overcome with the methods that you just described.
Yes, yeah. It's been a thrill for me to have taken the time to think about what is it that I've been doing all these years that is so helpful, and to kind of pull it all together. And at times I really felt that this book was writing itself. You know, it was just like I would be at the computer and I would say, where did that come from? Talk about spiritual.
Yeah. Well, I wrote a book called The Naked Truth About Breast Implants and felt the same thing. It did write itself, mostly in the early morning hours.
Yes. Yes, and the other thing that's kind of interesting is the power of metaphor.
Mm-hmm.
When I work hypnotically with people, the unconscious mind, which is what I'm trained to talk to when I work in trance mm-hmm. With people, the unconscious mind is like a kindergartner. And so it loves wordplay, it loves stories, it loves metaphors, and you watch the person relax and open up receptively mm-hmm. to these things, and you're saying things indirectly, but it goes right in. And my last chapter, I talk a lot about creativity and the things that people were doing while they were waiting, you might say, waiting for the miracle. One couple bought a fixer-upper and they stripped the floors themselves, and they, you know, painted the walls themselves, and they installed, you know, this, that, and the other thing. They were giving birth to a house until
right.
the conception took place and they could give birth to their daughter. So the power of engaging in creative acts It's like, you know, what a wonderful thing to do in the meantime. You know, the only thing that's going to solve the infertility problem is bringing home their baby, and I do understand that. But the letting go techniques, and certainly getting involved in painting a wall, is a way of keeping your mind on, you know, dipping the roller in and making sure it's spread evenly on the wall. You're engaged. You're focused on something other than how unhappy you are.
Right. Yeah, that's very true. The getting out of yourself is very important, almost for any negative emotion that comes up. Realizing that there's a lot of people a lot worse off than you, realizing that you're actually, you know, you have a lot of blessings in your life. And you say in your book that gratitude is almost a universal complement to this process.
Yes, it certainly is. And and people have, you know, there's a place where I talk about gain from the pain. And I go through and talk about all the individuals that I interviewed and what they felt was the ways in which they felt they were better off because they had been infertile. Gratitude is one of them. They feel they're more patient and loving parents than they might have been. They feel that they've repaired their relationship. I mean, there's a list a mile long of how people feel that they found what you can call the bless in the mess.
I think a lot of, as you said, some of the women who come to you now were busy doing other things and kind of time got away from them. I think that there's a couple of factors there. One is that I do believe there's some contaminants in our environment that make our endocrine system not work as it should, and maybe even, you know, some components in medication and maybe even vaccines that can interfere with fertility. These factors are more prominent now than they were, say, 50 years ago. The other thing is that I think people are, there's a natural movement, I think, and I think it makes a lot of sense to try to do your career first and have your family second. Number one, you're more financially stable. Number two, you're not trying to do two difficult things at once. This is primarily for the woman, but if child-rearing duties are shared, could be true for the man as well. And I guess other than putting your eggs in sperm in the freezer and planning for this before you're 35, what else do you think we can do to be able to have children, say, even at 50?
Well,
you know, our lifespans are now, you know, 80 to 90.
And there are women who have certainly taken advantage of the technology and have given birth, you know, much later, late 40s and early 50s. That's true. I mean, you really raised three different issues which I would like to address. One is that fertility patients can conceptualize what they're going through as handing over their seeds to the medical profession. They are the soil. And when you say, what can they do, I find that patients will do just about anything. That's how strong the drive is to have, you know, a family that includes children. So you find people who will change their diet. They go for acupuncture. They lose weight. They stop smoking. They stop drinking. They really, you know, the ones who take my classes become aware of lifestyle. I've had women who have been on the partner track in law firms. And they go to their boss and they say, take me off. And that's the end of that. They pull back because they realize, I've not said it to them this way, but in some ways they're trying to be a man. And a woman's body needs care. It needs self-care. The ancient Hebrews had menstruating huts that women went to, and then if you read the book The Red Tent, you know, you give birth, you go to this place where you're pampered, and the community takes care of your husband, your mm-hmm. children, so that you can recuperate. This is mm-hmm. lost in this world.
It is.
And women who want children and are having trouble with it will go the route. They will look at stress warning signals. They'll look at lifestyle. As far as the tendency to get themselves established in a career first, that's the sociological trend was just behind me. And so, you know, I came out of college and landed not terribly happily and without taking the training in teaching, because that was what women did. And then after I had my three daughters, I went back to graduate school and I got my MSW. So you're right, you know, to establish, you know, whether it's a doctorate or a law degree or a medical degree first, it makes more sense. Except then you're running into all the complications that come from decreased fertility. I worked with a woman just recently who was not in a relationship when she was in her 30s, and she said, damn it, I am going to have a child. And she banked not her eggs, because that technology was not in the forefront in those days. She selected a sperm donor, and she banked frozen embryos, and then married, and at age 44, I believe, or 45, she conceived and gave birth to her son, and came into me just recently, or came back to me, because I had worked with her hypnotically with that pregnancy. And this time, given her age, she's 47 now, her husband had agreed that they would use the embryos that she had banked all 10 or 12 or 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. Now there's a trend for women to freeze their eggs.
Right.
I'm not sure that the technology is where it will go, but it's better than years ago. I'm in this field 33 years. And, you know, years ago when it first got started, there wasn't much hoopla about it. They felt they didn't really have it down to a science. But it's trending in the direction where it's part of the NYU program. Unattached women are going there and freezing their eggs.
Well, that brings up the question of education. Do you think women, young women, professional women, are educated enough to know to do this?
That's a fabulous question, and I think that the answer is no.
I mean, until
it gets into, you know, Vogue and Cosmo and Red Book, and it's on the 6 o'clock news and all of that, people just go along happily, they're going to work, they're building their career, they're meeting friends, the happy hour, you know, they're free as birds and liking it, and then oops.
Forgot to have a kid.
Yeah, you have no idea how many times people have said that sentence to me.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, oops, I forgot to have a kid.
Hell no.
Yeah.
It's ADD to the nth degree, huh? Well, so I think people should, you know, shows like, I'm sure you do, radio and TV all the time, you're bringing the awareness to them that there is a... Is a statistical.
And sometimes I've had women say to me that their doctors warned them, and it made them angry. They didn't want to hear it. I'm not ready.
That's true.
You know, and then they'll quote, you know, my grandmother was 42 when my mother was born, you know, something like that.
Yeah. I actually did some research on pregnancies that are like in their 60s, and there was an interesting pattern. The pattern was that they stopped their menses early, say in their mid-40s, they went on hormone replacement therapy, usually natural, and turned out they had eggs. They still had eggs, but they just didn't, you know, discard them every month. And then they were going about their business, probably having unprotected sex in their 60s, and they got pregnant.
I've not heard of unprotected sex resulting in a pregnancy in the 60s, but certainly the news carried a few stories about women in their 60s who used ovum donation and possibly sperm donation as well, because the uterine lining can be encouraged to build up to a degree where there can be implantation. And then that story came back and smacked people in the face when the woman who had three-year-old twins at 63 contracted cancer. I forget what kind of cancer she had, and died at 66. And, you know, the public, or an aspect of the public, was up at arms, you know, how dare she do this, you know, does she think she's immortal, blah, 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 blah. So,
well, I guess it is a risk to statistically because of the cancer rates, but I think with understanding why we have such high cancer rates and doing the appropriate detoxifications and avoidance of certain things would help that. Certainly, I think the reason we have all these cancers is the same reason we have infertility. I think it's certain chemicals that are hormonally active.
Environment, you mean?
I mean, look at breast and prostate cancer that don't exist in other countries to near the degree that they do in the U.S. So, you know,
you're talking about food
something
additive
in our environment.
And our environment and whatnot.
Yeah, well, you know the story. The Japanese women come over and within a generation or two have the same rates we do.
In Japan, they don't.
Or China. Okay. Although in Japan, they probably have rates of other things now that there's so much nuclear radiation over there.
No.
So, breast cancer rates may go up. But in any case, I think awareness of chemical toxicity in our environment is at the heart of infertility as well as cancer, I think.
I have a patient who is 43, and she is hell-bent on getting pregnant naturally. She's had chelations for heavy metals and... I mean, the kinds of medical testing that's done by traditional Western doctors is not what reveals the more subtle malfunctions in people.
Right.
I think she was working with a naturopath.
It's actually, though, not the kinds of chemicals that chelation would do. Chelation will do heavy metals, which is good for the immune system. So if she has an immune deficit at the basis of her infertility, that would be good. But I might suggest you to research electrolysis foot baths, which are which were developed by Dr. Overman, that get out hydrophobic chemicals. Because regular ionic foot baths get out hydrophilic chemicals, but hydrophobic chemicals are probably those chemicals at the basis of infertility, and as well as the carcinogenic chemicals that fall in the plastics, you know, category. There's no question that arsenic and other hydrophilic chemicals can cause cancer, cause cancer too. But if I were to recommend to a woman who had infertility and she wanted to check out detoxification, I would recommend electrolysis foot baths. I have workman's comp patients that a lot of times burn patients with chemical burns, and I'll give them these electrolysis foot baths, and the whole room will smell like the chemical. So there's little doubt that it works.
I just want to clarify, did you say foot baths?
Yeah, they put their feet in kind of electrified, I mean, not electricity, but electromagnetic fields in the water with a little bit of salt. And then the chemical that they were exposed to in excess, be it chlorine, benzene, toluene, whatever ene it is, or even plastic. Of course, plastic doesn't have a smell. Will come out as a result of the footbath. It's a technology that very few people know about. In fact, I was interviewing the head of Canyon Ranch on his book and the detox box, and he had never heard of it. And this, he presumably is one of the experts in the country. He was very excited because, of course, hydrophobic chemicals are a big problem. Big problem, especially with infertility, cancer, and other endocrine-related problems.
And the researcher is Dr. Oberman, O-B-E-R-M-A-N.
James Oberman, yes. He's a naturopath in Ohio, and he has developed electrolysis foot baths. I don't know of any other person who came up with it. Dr. Oberman has spiritual hearing to the nth degree. He's very talented.
This is a very wonderful and useful piece of information for me because people are asking about this kind of thing all the time.
Right. Well, that's the only one I know of. Other ones may exist, but I don't think so because I've done this radio show for 17 years, and I did a TV show for 6 years. So you can imagine the number of authors I've interviewed. And nobody's ever heard of. I mean, nobody's ever told me of anything. I've interviewed Dr. Oberman, of course, and he was the one that told me about what he had. And we've used it here for years. So that's something that you might consider if somebody feels it's physical, you know, cause. Of course, you know, we've talked about emotional causes. We've talked about spiritual causes, past life traumas. I mean, there's a whole range. I think it behooves one to use a method like applied kinesiology to to figure out where the problem lies. And, of course, there may be more than one problem. There often is. But treating the cause of the problem is way, way more successful than not knowing the cause of the problem. It really is in any situation.
Well, that's sort of like problem-solution. You know, you've got a direct line then.
Right, right. Yeah. It's much more likely to be successful. Well, we're coming up to the end of our hour. Would you like to give your contact information one more time, Helen?
Okay, thank you so much. Helen Adrian, A-D-R-I-E-N-N-E. And my contact phone number is 212-758-0125. My email address is helen@mind-body-unity.com. And the website is mindbodyunity.com, where there's lots and lots and lots of information. There's a blog, and there's also a blog on Psychology Today. You can go into psychologytoday.com/blog. /fertile-ground. And I think you would enjoy, if you've enjoyed the program, you would enjoy my book, On Fertile Ground, Healing Infertility.
And, well, thank you very much for joining us today. I appreciate your time. Also, we want to mention that the book has exercises and information that would help people with any sort of problems, especially anxiety, depression, self-esteem problems. So if infertility is not a pressing issue, but you have other things going on, you might want to take a look at her book as well. Again, Helen, thank you very much for joining us.
Yes, and thank you for helping me get my message out, Dr. Kolb. I appreciate it very much.
You're welcome. Next week, we have Marie Jones back, Destiny versus Choice, the Scientific and Spiritual Evidence Behind Fate and Free Will. Should be a great hour of discussion. Then Ed Edwards is coming back on the 18th to discuss biointrinsic energy. And then on the 25th, Dr. Richard Presser will be back on talking about the 2012 countdown. We have some real interesting new information about 2012 that's come out that we'll share then. The Noetic Science Meeting is the 16th of February at 7:30 at the Dunwoody office. Richard Sachs is a producer. His DVD, Frequency of Genius, he will be discussing and showing excerpts from. This is a great DVD with leaders in the consciousness field, as well as information that I think everybody needs to know that they may not know about things happening in our world. That will be on the 16th. We will be also having an advanced Avalon effect training. Avalon is a light system to put light energy into the body using biophysics. That will be at 4370 Georgetown Square on the 26th of February. And we will also have a lecture, Understanding Light and Wellness with Avalon Effect, at Hilton Garden Inn, Atlanta Perimeter Center in Atlanta, on the 25th of February from 1 to 4 p.m. I'm also pleased to announce the I Can Do It retreat. This is an inspiring and motivating mind, body, soul event coming to Atlanta, San Jose, Vancouver, and Toronto in the upcoming months. It provides you with the opportunity to meet some of your favorite authors like Dr. Wayne Dyer, Marianne Williamson, Cheryl Richardson, Louise Hay, and more. And so join them and your peers for this uniquely inspiring and motivating retreat. Don't miss out. Just go to icandoit.net to find out dates for a city near you or call 1-800-654-5126. I plan on going to the one in Atlanta in mid-April. Again, thank you for joining us, and join us next week for Temple of Health Radio Show.